The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests of Reality Realty are not necessarily the views or opinions of Northumberland 89.7 FM. The information given is designed to be informative and helpful. You should always consult a professional when buying or selling your home.
I'll light the fire. You place the flowers in the vase that you bought today. Staring at the fire for hours and hours while I listen to you playing your love songs.
Hello, Northumberland County, and welcome to Reality Realty, Northumberland's 89.7 FM's real estate talk show, where we take on, we talk about, and we interview guests on all things real estate with a direct focus on Northumberland County and all the communities within it. I'm Dale Bryant, and I'm a real estate broker, and my co-host is Dave Smith, certified home inspector. Good morning, Dave.
Hey, Dale. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I guess, Dave, it's all about the weather this week.
I did an inspection the other day. There was no heat in the house. I went to do the faucet, and there was actual icicles coming out of the faucet. So I will do a segment one day on home inspecting when there's no heat.
Yeah, I can imagine how this kind of weather, when we get a big dumping of snow like we've had, how that affects you, what you do.
It's a challenge. It's a challenge.
Yeah, same here. I mean, people are less likely to want to go out and look at property when there's piles of snow on the lawns and vacant land. Well, that kind of project is just about over because you can't see what you're looking at.
Exactly.
Well, Dave, we have a great show again today. I know I say that every week, but I truly believe it every week. Today we have a real estate lawyer in our studio. We have Megan Adams, and she is an associate with Third Street Law. And she's going to talk to us in our first segment about what her role is as a lawyer and how that plays out in regards to a real estate transaction. We'll also have our home inspection tip of the week. We'll be looking at a snapshot of today's real estate market in Northumberland County, and we'll also be doing points to ponder.
Ah, new tagline.
Yeah, new tagline. For those of you who are listening regularly, points to ponder is actually the old Did You Know segment with just a snappier name.
Very nice. You're really polishing things up there, Dale.
Yeah, well, our listeners deserve it, Dave, and so we spare no expense. Anyways, Dave, why don't you get started on the home inspection tip of the week?
Well, I really want to get some theme music for this home inspection tip of the week, so let's work on that. But I'm going to try to build it up with emphasis. The home inspection tip of the week is beware the octopus. Now, when you're preparing, you're putting your house out there, you've gone to the point of getting an inspection. You want to remove all the unnecessary corded appliances, cell phone cords, power bars, all of these things. And this is the octopus. Beware the octopus. The inspector, number one, the inspector is trying to assess all of the receptacles throughout the home. And as a rule, we won't unplug most items like computers or appliances with clocks or freezers, etc. And this applies even to, you know, microwave ovens and, you know, most everything has a computer in it. Most everything has a clock on it now. So we do not unplug those devices. But that's understandable. But if it happens too often within a home and there's too many receptacles are filled with cords and plugs, the inspector would then need to report that only a percentage were tested, and this leaves a question mark about the electrical system in a home, and you don't want question marks at the end of the home inspection. You want conclusions. So try to make sure that you remove any unnecessary cords, any unnecessary appliances, anything, you know, baby monitors, this sort of thing that are not being used while the inspection is going on, just to make it as quick and as easy as possible. Number two, excessive splitter blocks, power bars, and extension cords. These indicate limited receptacles, and in some cases are reported as a fire hazard in a home inspection. If they are excessive, if they're running through doorways, if they're running around appliances, if they're underneath carpeting, this sort of thing. So you probably want neither of those things in your home inspection report, either the fact that you couldn't report on a lot of receptacles or that you have excessive extension cord use. So that's my home inspection tip of the week.
Thank you, Dave. Let's take a look at a snapshot of today's residential real estate market here in Northumberland County. We have had 49 listings sold, residential listings sold over the past month, and that's up considerably from our report last week where we were at 35. Listings for sale right at this present time, residential listings, are 312. And what is the price, the average price over the past year in Northumberland County? Well, residential listings have been listed at approximately $297,000, and people have been receiving over the past 12 months approximately $287,000 for these homes, which is on average 96.6% of their asking price in a market time of approximately 83 days. We take some of this information, Dave, as you know, and we calculate it into an absorption rate, and that's basically a ratio of supply and demand, just to let us know, are we in a seller's market, buyer's market, a balanced market? And our absorption rate today is at 15.7%, and that's traditionally accepted as a balanced market. First time we've reported on a balanced market for about 2 months now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And these statistics and the information required to calculate the absorption rate comes to us from the Northumberland Hills Association of Realtors. In today's mortgage rates, we've had a drop, and we were anticipating a drop a number of weeks ago when the Bank of Canada lowered their overnight rate. And right now, the best five-year fixed rate is down to 2.54% from last week's report at 2.59%. Small drop, but a drop all the same. The best five-year variable is still prime minus 0.9, but the key factor is most lenders have dropped their prime from 3% to 2.85. So that leaves us with a 1.95% variable interest rate on a five-year variable. Excellent rates. And these rates come to us from the Mortgage Wellness Group here in Northumberland County. So our Reality Realties points to ponder.
I liked it.
I hope everybody likes it. Well, on our points to ponder today, Dave, I was reading a book. One of my daughters got me a book for Christmas a couple years ago, and it's titled Hidden Ontario, Secrets from Ontario's Past by the author Terry Boyle. A great little book, looks at a bunch of communities within Ontario and some neat trivia, some history. And it has a section, a chapter on Cobourg, and they start off with in 1797, where this Samuel Ashe of New York State, he arrived in Kingston after he traveled across Lake Ontario with some family members in an open boat. It proceeds to say that in Kingston, they bought a couple oxen, and they heard there was some land available west of there, and they headed west, and they ended up in what we know today to be Cobourg. Apparently, back in that time, in 1797, it was low land, it was very wet and somewhat swampy. And as we know, anybody that lives in this area, a number of creeks that are making their way to Lake Ontario, and he started clearing the land and started a settlement here in Cobourg. The next report they had was of this Elwood Buck. There's just not enough guys, Dave, named Elwood anymore.
You don't hear a lot of that.
No, and so this goes back to 1808, and apparently this gentleman, Elwood Buck, he acquired a large tract of land, and the novelist goes on to say, and he promptly opened a tavern.
Literally, like he got off of his horse and started building a tavern. Is that what you're saying?
If that is promptly, then that's what he did. And for some reason, that was a key point. Anyways, his area there became a settlement, and it was known as Buckville. So that's the first name for Coburg that is, at least in this book. And it remained Buckville until it was named something we're more familiar with seeing, Amherst. And the developer in the West End, Max LeMarchand, he has named his development after this historic name, New Amherst. So then the name changed to Hamilton after the township it was located in, Hamilton Township. And then in 1819, so we go from 1808 Bucksville to 1819 when it was named Coburg in honor of a marriage of Princess Charlotte. Not too sure who Princess Charlotte was. Maybe I ought to be aware of that. And anyway, she married Prince Leopold of Saxe-Coburg, Germany. And so Coburg is named after the Saxe-Coburg with an extra O. We have an extra O in our Coburg. The Saxe-Coburg, Germany just has a C-O-B-U-R-G. And the author is guessing that it was just a spelling mistake. So by 1827, Coburg had a population of 350 people, about 40 homes, 2 inns, 4 stores, a grist mill, and several distilleries. Is there some commonality throughout this short history?
I like the fact that he wasn't there very long before he had competition, but with his quickly built tavern.
Well, his tavern were being likely supplied by these distilleries. Absolutely. But 350 people and you need several distilleries?
Absolutely. Yes,
I mean, they didn't have internet.
No.
And they didn't have cell phone, but they or motor vehicles or any of those toys, but they did have their pastime, it would seem.
Well, there's only 2 oxen to really socialize with, so you need something to keep yourself interested.
I don't know. Between 1797 and 1827, there might have been a couple more oxen.
All right, this is Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio. Join Dale and myself after this short break, and we'll be talking with Megan Adams, real estate lawyer with Third Street Law.
Take some of this. I don't know what you would think, baby. And a little of that. With just a hint of... And you've got yourself the Gumbo Radio Show. Every Saturday at 7, get prepared to go on the most amazing rock and roll adventure ever with your hosts, Andrew and Chris Massey. The Gumbo Radio Show, Saturdays at 7, here on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio.
The 3 most visited sites on the web are Google, Facebook, and YouTube. For a business to thrive in such times, they have to make use of as many of these channels as possible. Is your business marketing through these platforms? Matthews Media is now offering a selection of social media marketing packages available for any size of business. We set up, customize, and push your content across all relevant online profiles, driving prospective clients toward your business. To find out more about online and social media marketing, visit our website at matthewsmedia.ca or call 905-375-9520.
Welcome back. This is Dale Bryant and Dave Smith on Reality Realty, Northumberland 89.7 FM's local real estate talk. And our guest today is Megan Adams. Megan is an associate with Third Street Law, located here in Coburg, and has developed a practice focused on real estate, wills, and estates. Megan completed her law degree at the University of Alberta and has practiced law here in Coburg since she was called to the bar in 2009. Megan's main practice area is residential real estate, mainly here in Northumberland County, and she enjoys the process of walking her clients through the legal steps involved in their purchase or sale transactions. Megan was raised here in Port Hope, where she currently lives with her husband and young daughter. Megan, welcome to our show, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Dale.
Yeah, you're very welcome. So, Megan, you grew up here, and you came back.
Absolutely.
You must have enjoyed it. Do you have a lot of family roots here?
I do. I believe my family came to Port Hope sometime in the early 19th century, and my grandmother's still in the house that they built there.
Oh, I need to read a little further on in my book, and maybe we'll see mention of you.
If it's Port Hope, then you will.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Megan, in a real estate transaction, as a lawyer, real estate lawyer, you should be getting involved either before or after there's a firm agreement of purchase and sale in place. If you're involved before there's a firm deal in place, what are some of the duties you will do as a lawyer?
Well, Dale, more often than not, I do want to point out that by the time agreement makes its way to my desk, it is firm and there's not much I can do. The client has entered into a firm and binding agreement and we work with what's in front of us and hope everything's okay. The rare circumstance clients will bring us agreements when they're still conditional on various conditions. And often one of the conditions would be solicitor approval or solicitor review.
Mm-hmm.
My obligation when I get the agreement at this stage is to review the agreement with the client to ensure they understand the nature of the contract and what they are signing. What I am not doing is looking at the agreement and approving it or disproving it. It's up to the client to take what I tell them and advise them of what the agreement means for them and decide then whether they're going to firm up the agreement or walk from the agreement.
So Megan, you're saying what you don't do is necessarily give them real estate advice is if this is a good investment or not. Is that what you're...
Absolutely. Okay. That's certainly what I don't do. But as a value-added service, we also take the agreements and we will ensure that the municipal address is right, the legal description, if in the agreement's correct, the names of the party is correct, and go from there. So we do take it one step further and ensuring that it is in the client's best interest what conditions are within the agreement.
Right. And do you find, Megan, that people are interested in your advice on whether it's a good investment or not? Is that something sometimes people will ask you about?
On occasion, because I do see a lot of agreements come across my desk. So more often than not, they would ask about mortgage rates if they have a good mortgage rate. But I can't provide any advice on this as I'm not an expert.
Right.
So just to define then, so your role really is clarification for the client. Clarification of what the agreement is, letting an understanding. So it maybe helps to explain to them in exactly what it is they're doing, rather than giving an opinion on it. It's more a case of just clarification and understanding on behalf of the client. That's your role.
That is my role and obligation at that stage. But I will also take time with the client to find out why they're buying the property, what their intentions of the property is, and find out a little bit more about the property. And that might affect my discussions with them in reviewing the terms of the agreement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I guess just to make sure that this property is properly zoned for their intended use and items like that.
Exactly.
Okay.
So what are the... And maybe you've already covered this, but what does a lawyer not do, or what are some of the misconceptions that you sometimes come across when it comes to these transactions that the buyer may assume you're doing on their behalf? Are there any common misconceptions that we could maybe share with the audience just to maybe help educate them a little bit on what your role is?
Perhaps it's more just a wording issue, but often the standard condition is the agreement of purchase and sale will be conditional upon lawyer's approval. And again, we will not approve the agreement. What we'll do is just ensure you understand what the agreement means. Not necessarily that people assume we'll be doing something that we don't, but we might not get all the information we need in order to give them legal advice. So again, we'll want to know, are you planning on having a hobby farm? Are you planning on running your business out of the practice? We'll go through the agreement in detail to see which chattels are included in the agreement of purchase and sale to ensure those are the things within the building that you intend to take and what fixtures are excluded. So these are things we do go through in detail because I recognize in the heat of the moment when Dale or realtors are negotiating agreements, they're quickly done and the client's heart's in it and they'll do anything to get it, but they come to see me after having some breathing room and I take time with the agreement, so maybe then we see things that, oops, the fridge and stove were supposed to be included, but they're not. So that would be one of the more minor things.
So would you say it's fair, Megan, would it be fair to say that not all agreement of purchases and sale are created equal?
I don't know if I would go so far, Dale. We have seen everything. I find it's great for the lawyer to review the agreements as a second set of eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Often buyer and seller might be put into the agreement incorrectly where they'd wanted the other, or there's something was missed in the agreement. So it's great to have a second set of eyes. That being said, realtors tend to have, some realtors like putting in more information, some realtors like to leave out information, and we get to know the quirks and styles.
Thank you, Megan.
Of the realtors in the area. And we always prefer to see local realtors on our local agreements because we know the realtors in the area know our community, they know the nuances. So that's always a relief to see when we recognize it's a lawyer in the area.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that quite often your role, as is often with the realtor, and for that matter, the home inspector's role is just assumed. And but I've seen some situations where the lawyer saved a near disastrous transaction, and where someone was purchasing a property that had been used as a horse farm for decades and decades and decades, and they were purchasing it for same. But change in zoning, I'm not sure what the particulars were, but they were just about to do the deal. And it turns out they had not had a horse on the farm in over 2 years. And mm-hmm. because of the zoning changes, they were no longer allowed to use it as a horse farm. And this is exactly why the buyer was buying it. And the lawyer, as I understand it, found that out at the very last minute and really saved this buyer from buying something that they literally, in its essence, did not want. It was not going to fulfill their needs. So, you know, there are so many particulars, so many instances, and that's an obscure one, but that's exactly what the sort of thing that you could probably find out.
And this is why you want to go see your lawyer before the agreement's firm, because it's always beneficial that an issue is found out before closing, but mm-hmm. too often the issues are found out immediately prior to closing, as opposed to at the beginning of the transaction, ask the right questions, do the right searches, and that agreement may not have even firmed up.
Well, certainly it's an emotional time, whether it be wanting to own horses or wanting to buy a vacation property or buying your first home. It's emotional. There's a lot of passion involved. And sometimes that emotion and passion can cloud your judgment on these things. And that's why you bring in the professionals within this whole transaction. They can look at it from a direction of not having that emotional involvement and see things for what they really are. So your role is very important. And also, I think I'm speaking more from a buyer's perspective. We've, I think, bought and sold 6 or 7 homes in the last 20 years. And we went interprovincial as well. We lived in Alberta for a while, just north of Calgary and Airdrie. We lived in Manitoba, and we had that interprovincial thing, and we had to deal with a lawyer by phone. So having faith and having faith in your lawyer and having a good working relationship and trust is key when you're doing something so important for your family. So you probably get a lot of good feelings out of being able to put people into these homes and helping them carry on with their lives and take their next step in life.
Well, Dave, I imagine it's the same with you. Like you said, people get very emotional and they get attached to certain properties. And then you and I come in and sometimes rain on their parade. It's very difficult for them to hear something as, it's not very fancy, but if the electrical, there's something with the electrical, or mm-hmm. if I have access issues and I'm seeing struggles with the property, we are the pessimists that will bring them down and at least ensure they understand the risks that we see in front of us.
Well, ignorance is not bliss in a real estate transaction. It's not bliss in a home inspection. My job is, much like yours, is to let them understand the facts. And I look at it as making this work into your budget. I don't know what you can afford. I don't know what it is you're planning on doing. But my role here is to give you understanding of what's going on from a physical perspective of the home. In your job, you're doing the same thing, only from a legal aspect. Understand what it is you're getting into and what you're committing to.
And I know Dale practices the same way. You put the client's risk to them. You ensure you work with them. So that they're getting the best they can get. There are realtors who see themselves as sellers as opposed to real estate professionals to ensure the advocates. Clients are getting advocates, yes, is a good word for it. So we do like getting the agreements in where we know Dale's a bit of a pessimist too and has thought things through, as opposed to an agreement just to get a sale and then we know it's a disaster from the beginning. And
well, Megan, you mentioned just a few minutes ago that you get a chance to see everything. What would some of the more common items be that runs across your desk in an agreement of purchase and sale that you may consider an omission or an error or things maybe you wish just weren't there?
Well, when we get an agreement in, either to review or it's a firm agreement, we'll pull the parcel register from the land transfer system so that we can see what it provides us with, a snapshot of the property to ensure that the names of the sellers on the agreement of purchase and sale correspond with the names of the owners on the parcel register. We look to ensure that there's no strange easements on the property that mm-hmm. the client's not aware of, restrictive covenants on the property, and we go from there.
And do you find sometimes that these key points are missing, like the accuracy of these descriptions or the existence of easements possibly when you get an agreement of purchase and sale?
Absolutely. Condos is a specific place we see strife with error, where instead of putting in the legal unit descriptions, we see the description as it is municipally known. So then we'll take them and we'll tweak them and ensure that the client is buying what they believe they are buying.
I've gone to situations where I've gone to do an inspection and I've been directed by the buyer's agent not to drive on the driveway, to drive up on the lawn. Because there was an issue over the shared driveway and it was not going well. So, there's so many things that you would just never think of as a buyer. And certainly these are situations where you want to have a lawyer involved and have everything looked after. So thank you, Megan, for that. You're going to stick around. We're going to do another segment with you, I think. This is Reality Realty on Northumberland 89.7 Truly Local Radio. Join Dale and me after this short break. We'll continue to talk to Megan about the real estate process at the lawyer's office.
For over 25 years, Pritchard's Climate Care has been your personal climate expert in the Northumberland area. Pritchard's offers complete heating and air conditioning service and repair for your home or business. We make sure the air you breathe is healthy and comfortable. Pritchard's Climate Care has become one of Southern Ontario's most trusted installers of heating and air conditioning products. Sign up for our We Care maintenance plans and get your furnace service for half off our regular service price. Pritchard's Climate Care, we're not just your climate experts, we're your neighbors. Call us at 905-885-8216 or toll free at 1-877-791-6975.
That does not sound good.
I know. And who are you?
I'm the Midas Touch, and I think you need me.
It's that bad?
Not for long. Head to Midas for a comprehensive brake system evaluation, and if needed, we can install brake pads and shoes that come with a lifetime guarantee. How's that sound?
Like sound advice?
Nice one.
Visit Midas at 6 Strathy Road in Cobourg for great customer service from licensed Midas mechanics. For details, give them a call at 905-372-1959.
Trust the Midas Touch.
Welcome back. This is Dale Bryant and Dave Smith on Reality Realty, Northumberland 89.7 FM's local real estate talk. We're just going to pick up from where we left off last segment with Megan Adams, associate with Third Street Law here in Cobourg. And we were talking about what goes on at the lawyer's office in regards to a real estate transaction. So Megan, once an agreement is firm and in place and your office receives it, typically from the real estate office, the office will send it to you. What happens next?
This is often our first point of contact with the client. I'll contact the client directly. It's important that the lawyer speaks with the client, builds the rapport, and asks the questions that need to be asked at the front end of the agreement, as I pointed out before. We'll discuss with the client the property they're buying. I like to ask, why did you pick this property, to get an idea of trigger potential searches I might have to do. Mm-hmm. I ask who's going to be on title. Often the agreement of purchase and sale might have a young person on title, but then they say, but the bank wants my mom on title too. Mm-hmm. That really affects the nature of what we do for the client, and we need to know that at the front end, not 5 days before closing when we get the mortgage instructions in that say mom has to be on title.
They might not even know at that point.
You're right.
If their That's lender true. Is still working on that deal, mm-hmm. and they're not strong enough, they may be told in time that they do need somebody else.
And this can create some significant mm-hmm. issues. We want to know about it early on in the process. I might find out if a single person's buying, if they're having a partner move in with them. So I might direct them to a family law lawyer just to discuss cohabitation agreements or the implications of not having one.
Mm-hmm.
From there, we send our clients our engagement letter. It's full of some really good information, some instructions as to what the client needs to do to ensure the transaction proceeds smoothly. We really hope they read this letter as it's the map to what we will be doing for them and what they need to do for us.
Do you find that sometimes people have ignored that letter?
Generally, I find they do ignore that letter, yes.
Yeah, it's easy. It's easy to do. I guess they're just thinking, oh, the lawyer's going to do it all.
Exactly.
It's all going to fall into place. I'm hands off.
You are right.
So you say you refer them to a family law or a family lawyer?
On occasion.
On occasion, in situations where there are family members involved in the transaction. So in your office, would you have someone in that office that way, or would this be sending them to another office?
We do have family law lawyers in our office, so we do practice a collaborative practice in our office. So we'd probably sit down with the client and the family law lawyer just to discuss their potential options.
Well, this is a growing thing, I think, as far as that's concerned, is being able to do everything within the walls of the office certainly adds convenience. I mean, it serves space, so that would be valuable, I think, to most buyers to know they don't have to start anew with someone else.
It's fantastic. There's four lawyers. We practice each practice in various areas of law. If a deal seems to be going south, I'll bring in a litigator to maybe send that litigation letter to the lawyer or advise the client as to tendering and potential issues. So it's a really amazing place to practice in that
mm-hmm.
sense.
Great.
But hopefully we don't get there and the agreement stays straightforward. So once we send the initial letter, the next thing we do is look at the title search date and the agreement of purchase and sale. I should have brought this up before. Title search date, that's the date we have to write the seller's lawyer and I'm speaking on behalf of the purchaser here, to advise them of any title issues we wish for them to correct or things to do before closing. We must get them our request prior to this requisition date or title search date, failing which they may not be forced to fix this issue. So I know you did want to touch on title search and what it involves.
Yeah, that's a pretty big deal. And that requisition date, title search date, that's typically a couple weeks you like to have before the close?
2 weeks before closing, unless you're getting me the agreement of purchase and sale 2 weeks and 1 day before closing, in which case I have a day to get our conveyancer out to the registry office and put everything together. We have had it. We get it done, but we don't like that.
You likely don't say good things about that realtor on that particular day if it's that tight.
We never say anything bad about the realtors, Dale.
Okay. I tried to lure you into that one.
So on these title searches, what are you hoping to find and what are you hoping not to find?
So the way the title search works is we have an out-of-office conveyancer who's fantastic, and he will go to the registry office and pull the documents from the registry office in Coburg along with the documents that can be found electronically and bring them to us. And I look at this, and what I want to see is clean title. So what the title search will tell me is the current owner's name, how title is held by them, the legal description of the property, which I want to match the agreement of purchase and sale. It will give me an idea. It could be a whole show, but no one would be all that interested. But we have a new registry system in Ontario. It's come into force over the last 10 years where everything was in a paper registry system, and the government's worked to bring each and every property in Ontario into what's called the land title system. If a property in the registry system is just such a mess, you're not clear who the owner is, not clear what the property is, it sits in the registry system. So the worst possible thing we can see when we get the agreement in is to see that it is a non-convertant still in the registry system, because who knows what's going to be involved in fixing it. We might be looking at delaying closing. Well, it's the seller's lawyer's obligation to fix any potential issues. It may still affect our client's ability to close on time.
Right.
We also don't want to see any executions on title that can affect things. Any liens, legal aid liens, property tax liens. There could be easements on title that we're already aware about, but we'll pull the easements and figure out what the easements are. There might be bylaws registered in title, and we'll pull the bylaws to see if they affect our client and if they're good or bad.
Megan, when you look at title, do you sometimes see liens or different registrations against title that aren't actually accurate? They're just still there, but they've already been taken care of?
Absolutely. So what we see is a property might be subject to an execution, but what happened is when the government transferred all the properties in the land title system, if there's any executions and liens people have put on similar names as the person in that area, then suddenly you have a similar name application. You know, if you have a Jim Smith, you might have a problem and recognize that there might be similar name executions, and depending on the amount of the execution, you might have to chase down the person who put that execution on. It's a bit of a mess, not unsolvable, but again, we need time
That's
to
why
fix
you
those
need
issues.
That, those 2 weeks.
I can speak to you never want to have the name Smith when you're purchasing.
Oh,
yeah.
You don't
David
want
Smith,
the name
even
David,
worse.
You will curse your parents for calling you David William John.
Oh, yeah. Because then it's going to pull in, it would pull in the executions on the William Smiths, the yes. David Smiths, and the John Smiths. And we do a lot of running around. Again, it's not backbreaking, and we typically don't charge additional to do it, but we need that time. So we look at the title search date, not we're going to have it in by that date. We do it as soon as we can, but the title search date is the outside date to do it
about
by.
About four houses in, I began to learn to maybe allocate a little bit more time off work. If I'm going to do that.
I'm amazed you've bought so many houses in the profession. I bought my first house at 700 square feet 7 years ago, and I refused to ever move, being the pessimist and seeing the potential issues.
That's a whole other show. My parents and her parents would talk about that.
you shouldn't mention that, Megan. That's not good for business.
For me either, this is true.
So, Megan, in a title search, if something gets missed, if it doesn't get done properly, what kind of things can go wrong?
Well, that's where title insurance might kick in. Again, a whole nother topic, a whole nother show. But title insurance is a type of insurance on the vast majority of homes in Ontario on closing now that will insure over potential title issues. So often title insurance will cover the issue. Typically, similar to the horse farm example Dave gave, things come out one way or another, and so immediately prior to closing, these issues might come out and just stall the transaction. But I like to think my searches are – there's no issues, so I don't know what happens at the other side. But you certainly want the full title search done, and your lawyer is working behind the scenes, whether you know it or not.
Right.
Well, that's – you know, in listening to so many things that you know and so much knowledge you have and so much experience – and, you know, this just comes across as, number one, it's not something, it's not a do-it-yourself project. It's not something you can Google. And, you know, when you talk about an open-ended question at the beginning, you know, why are you interested in this property? This is where these things will come out in casual conversation, because you don't have that particular question armed with it. But in that conversation, something is probably going to come up that you can help protect the buyer from in their conversation. I like the open-ended question where you say, you know, what are you going to use this?
And I'm not creative, so I generally get my knowledge from outside sources. And that's actually our law society and our legal insurer that reminds you, ask the client, if they're buying it for the 1,000-square-foot deck off the back of the house that was just built, if it turns out the right permits were not used, it might get knocked down and you get compensated by title insurance. But if you bought it because of this deck, then we'll search and ensure there's no outstanding work orders and search the proper work's been done.
See, real estate is about home inspection. Dale, I've been trying to get that across to you.
Yeah, you don't miss a beat, Dave. You don't miss a beat. Megan, how about your involvement with mortgages and insurance in a real estate transaction?
People don't often realize the amount of work that goes into mortgages. Typically, it can often be more work than doing the remainder of the purchase. People don't know, but most of the time we represent the lender as well as the borrower in the transaction. Of course, the borrower is paying for it. But what this means is anything related to the transaction that could impact the lender, we must notify them. So if our clients advise us they've lost their job, fortunately, I haven't had that happen, that type of thing. Or if there is a quirky legal issue on title that maybe the client's willing to turn a blind eye to, we need to notify the lender. We had one last week where it was a buried gas tank. And it came up on a reference plan 2 days before closing, and the seller's lawyer had to tell, or the purchaser's lawyer had to tell their lender, and now we're going through a whole environmental.
Right. No, yeah.
Inspection.
Nobody wants to hear about that 2 days before close. And with the insurance as well, do you have some sort of involvement with insurance?
Absolutely. Where there's a lender, we are not closing a transaction without an insurance binder. So what an insurance binder is, it's the document from the insurer that informs us of the property being insured, the names of the people being insured, and the name of the lender. And it has to have magic wording we need to see in order for us to close on closing.
So quite often there are conditions on the purchase of the home. Whose job is it? Who ensures that all the conditions of an agreement have been met before closing?
Generally, it's great when the broker, the lawyer, and the real estate agent work together with respect to this. If there's a requisition date, I'll requisition and say, the agreement of purchase and sale said the toilet will be removed from the downstairs bedroom. Provide me proof that's been done. It's one I had this week.
Yeah.
And at the same time, then we work with the realtor to ensure it's been done. But the bottom line is it's the client that needs to ensure they've satisfied themselves that this has been done. So was the toilet removed? Is verbal enough for you? Do you want pictures? Do you have a further inspection to go in to see? But as the lawyer, I want to ensure that every condition has been met, because after closing, it's very hard to chase these things down.
And I think, Megan, that's why you're a real advocate of having that final inspection as close to close as possible, where people can walk through the home for that one last time and just ensure that everything is the way they expected it would be.
Absolutely. So often I say get in a day or two before closing. I love to see that extra inspection in the agreement of purchase and sale. Some lawyers don't, because it does create additional work for us, and it's questionable whether it should be involved in the legal or not. So sometimes, you know, you have the fridge switch out where they've taken the fridge, including the agreement of purchase and sale, put in a new one, that type of thing. And as lawyers, we'll squawk and say we're not closing, give us an abatement. Legally, we're obligated to close unless an issue goes to the root of title or your substantial enjoyment of the property, I think is the legal wording. So we'll fight back and forth. Typically in this community, we try to play nice in the sandbox. We recognize representing the sellers. It's better to resolve these issues pre-closing than have our seller receive small claims, plaintiff's claim following closing.
So besides the agreement of purchase and sale, where the purchasers and sellers are signing, what other documents should people expect to be signing with you?
Come see us about 2 days before closing. We have about an hour's worth of legal documents to sign, just to ensure everything matches up with what's in the agreement of purchase and sale, as well as mortgage documents.
You've been listening to Reality Realty on Northumberland 89.7 FM, truly local radio. Join Megan, Dale, and myself after this short break as we change things up and talk about steps you can take to ensure a smooth process selling your home.
Listen to us worldwide. Go to northumberland89.7.ca and select Listen Now, or download our TuneIn app for your mobile.
Jim McGrath understands that as much as we don't want to talk about it, wills and estate planning is a responsible thing to do for you and your family. With his help, you can reflect on your values and wishes and have a legal direction to let others know what kind of health and personal care you would want if you could not speak for yourself. Jim McGrath has been a lawyer for over 30 years, and he understands the law, so you don't have to. You owe it to yourself and your loved ones to call Jim McGrath today at 905-373-1999.
Welcome back to Reality Realty with Dave Smith, Dale Bryant, and our guest Megan Adams, real estate lawyer with Third Street Law here in Cobourg.
Megan, a real estate transaction can be a convoluted process, and it can seem like the client that there's either nothing to it, or it can become part of a bad chapter in their lives. What are some of the steps people can take to ensure a smooth process?
You need to build a good team around you of people with knowledge and can work for you in your best interest. This would include the realtor, the home inspector, the mortgage broker, as well as the lawyer. Again, lawyers do draft private agreements, but we prefer to see that realtor involved. The realtor has the knowledge to work with the client with respect to ensuring they get an investment for themselves and ensuring they purchase the right property. It's always terrible when you see people from the country thinking they like hotels, maybe a condo's for them, and you recognize immediately when they come in, this is going to be a problem. Or someone from the city who thinks, why not buy a hobby farm? And they come in and you say, what about your septic system? And they say, what septic? What is that? Yeah. So use a realtor. The home inspection is important as well. Think of the investment you're buying, and this minimal cost will give you an idea of what you're buying. If there are potential issues, you don't necessarily have to run. You can just negotiate with your realtor to either have the seller fix these issues prior to closing or discuss abatement and purchase price. A lot of time between the date the agreement signed and closing, we do like to see. When I started 6 years ago, 1 month to 2 months was fairly standard. Now, 3 weeks is quite common. So this doesn't give us time to fix legal issues when there are major issues. So if you can give it a long closing date, we do prefer to see that.
Megan, do you have a record? Do you have a record in which time you've received the agreement of purchase and sale and it closed?
I'm extremely risk adverse, but I was visiting family in Germany over Christmas, and someone came in with, I think it was a week and a half. They said it was a sale, but it turns out it was a sale and a purchase. But we got it done, but it had its hiccups, and the person was on their feet for that week and a half. So talk about taking that time off. But I don't want to beat any records. I like these long times. And you do need to hire the right people for you. You need to hire, if you're purchasing in Northumberland County, hire the local realtors, hire the local lawyers, hire the local inspectors who know how to deal with the country properties we deal with. I threw in, read correspondence from your lawyer. That initial letter is important. Mm-hmm. Prior to waiving your conditions, make sure you've met them. People with insurance, they often just assume a property will be insured. Insurance companies, I don't know if both of you are finding their hesitant these days with what to insure. We've even had clients buying in a subdivision who would think there'd be issues, but if it's aluminum wiring, the insurers are getting there. Century homes are a problem. Fireplaces, you might have to throw in additional clauses. Even in the city, insurers want to see clauses in that the property wasn't used, and lenders for grow-ups, essentially.
Right. So what I'm hearing here, Megan, is home inspection is in many ways more important than even the realtor in this case.
I think the team works together, but I say to clients, you're buying a used product. Yes. Courts don't look lightly after closing. It's very, very rare. Purchasers after closing can claim anything from the sellers, so why not spend the minimal money for the biggest investment of your life? Home inspections are absolutely
key. I love your comment on reacting in many cases to the custom aspects of each purchase. When someone mentions a septic tank, or coming from a city or an urban environment and not knowing what a septic tank is or what a pump is, well pump, this sort of thing. And it's the same thing I do on site. If I ask, if they were down in the basement looking at the pump, they don't know what a septic system is. If I ask them if they've never ever had one before, then I take some time and I explain to them exactly what the challenges are and what they'll have to deal with when it comes. It's usually by no means a game breaker, but I like to listen to the customer and make sure that I customize my answer to their needs or their the relevance of the property. So I really like the way
which is
that.
Fantastic. And even in the city, and even perhaps around here, there's been occasions where people have purchased and not realized they have septic tanks. Some properties in Port Hope in town have septic tanks. Who knew? Mm-hmm. But these are things that come out through the process of the team working together.
Well, often what I hear from a customer that's purchasing a rural home is just, I'm not going to have to pay for water every month. Well, it's a price to be paid for that.
Certainly.
For anyone who's ever experienced living on a septic and well system.
Absolutely. And Megan, what about financing? What can people do to make sure that the financing doesn't become an issue? Because I know that's one of the top, I would think it could be the top issue why deals don't go through.
It would be the top issue, Dale. So you need to ensure, you may have been pre-approved by your lender or your broker, but you need to make sure that when you have a condition, a conditional agreement, that they see the agreement. They may want an appraisal done of the property prior to confirming that they will give you financing with that property. We've had times where the agreement's firm, but the appraisal comes back lower than the purchase price. Mm-hmm. So the lenders lending less money, well, where are you going to come up with $30,000 unless you have a parent with a deep pocket? Mm-hmm. You've created problems for yourself. So ensure you work with a broker you can trust at that early stages to ensure everything is in order.
Yeah, and we've done a segment before. We had Carol Ann from the Mortgage Wellness Yes. Group here, and we talked about the pre-approval. And just because you have a pre-approval doesn't necessarily, there's no standard pre-approval. You don't know how deep the lender has looked into your credit bureau or your tenure at work or anything like that. So it's important to get a very thorough pre-approval.
Well, there's so many working parts to this. Megan's part, your part, Dale. To my end, my part.
And, oh, yeah, we've heard about your part.
but there's so many working parts. And actually, the other day I was speaking with a well-established realtor, and for the first time in a long time, I heard about a property going for above ask with competing offers. And this is when things get to be a little shaky when it comes to timing, where everybody gets a little desperate and they're concerned about losing the property and people are bidding over the asking price. And this is where you really want to take a breath and you want to make sure that you're doing all the things you should be to make sure you're purchasing this property properly, both from a legal aspect, from a mortgage and appraisal, home inspection aspect, because we're starting to get that shadow effect from the City of Toronto or the GTA in regards to people just going in and just bidding to get a property and taking all of those removing conditions like home inspection or pre-approvals, all those things, because you can get in a jackpot.
And I'd love to know how many of those deals fall through after their firm agreements and then the poor purchasers who are on the hook for whatever damages they might occur.
Beyond even deposits, etc.
Absolutely.
Yeah, legal damages.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the bright side, I mean, if you went in and you had, and you felt as though you had to go in clean without having that home inspection or financing clause, pardon me, at least you're in a community where if the seller has to put it on the market again, in all likelihood, it'll be a quick sale with the other people who wouldn't have those problems. So hopefully the damages would be minimized.
That's a very good point.
Yeah. And Megan,
I thought my point was good too, but
it was a great point as well.
Great point, Dave. And Megan, how about how many deals do you see come across your desk that are private sales?
I typically, I'm quite risk adverse, and if I'm busy enough and the private sales come across, often it's not a transaction I want to take on because, unfortunately, I'm not a realtor. I don't have the real estate background, and those are the deals that might have problems closing. You need to ask the right questions there. If you're representing a seller, you need to know if there's a tenant in that property and if that tenant got the right notice. You need to know what you're dealing with. You need to know HST issues. And we do private agreements. I might do a dozen a year at the most.
Mm-hmm. It definitely requires the eyes to be wide open, I guess.
And a statement that's signed that says they recognize I'm not a real estate agent, I'm not providing the expertise of a real estate agent, and this could create issues.
Mm-hmm. But they would be, I would assume then in what you're saying, that they'd be a little more a sensitive transaction to deal with than one that's handled by a real estate professional.
Absolutely. So often the client will call and they will want you to do things that lawyers don't necessarily do in a transaction. The realtor might, and often we do it. Often we say you'll have to do that legwork yourself, as that's a realtor's responsibility.
And Megan, one of the items we touched on earlier on, we had made a comment about how some people just think that this transaction, real estate transaction, is just going to fall into place. And as you mentioned, they might not read that initial correspondence. One of the points I think would likely be worth mentioning is to be available to your lawyer during this time that they're working on your deal.
I can't tell you how many people go away on cruises the week their transaction closes. And of course, those are the times when something happens at the property, an execution is found, something, we need to contact them, and that's a real struggle. So if at all possible, schedule your closing around the time you will be available. As well, be available. I text clients, I Facebook clients, I do whatever way I know I can get a hold of them as fast as I can so that you can get the information back and forth.
Well, as an employer in the past, in a different role as a business owner, take a few minutes and speak to your employer, your immediate supervisor. Make sure they understand what you're going through. And you may have to be longer than you thought because you don't control the situation, but you may be called out quickly. So to relieve some of the stress for your family, make sure your employer understands what you're doing and that you may have to give some time that you're not really in control of. So it's certainly a considerate way of doing it and maybe relieve the stress on the family as well going through that.
That's a really good point. Again, it's not something you can rush through. Often we need to ask the questions and take the time. So if a first-time home buyer says, I hope I'm in and out in half an hour, you won't be with me. So schedule that time.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if you've got other people, if you've got young kids and the stress is already a high level, try to relieve as much stress as you can with a bit of preparation.
But again, it's the biggest investment you're likely going to make, so take mm-hmm. the time and do it right.
Well, Megan, I'd like to thank you for joining us this morning. I know we were hoping when we originally talked, we were hoping to touch on title insurance. It's such a key component, I believe, as well as you do, to real estate ownership. And hopefully after this experience, you'll be willing to join us again, and maybe we could do that another time. And Megan, what's the best way for our listeners to contact you?
The best way to contact me would be by phone at 3rd Street Law at 905-372-3773, extension 104, or by email at m.adams@3rdstreetlaw.ca. And thanks so much for having me, Dale and Dave.
Well, you're very welcome. It was a pleasure.
Well, Mr. Bryant, another hour has flown by talking about a very popular topic, the legal aspects of real estate. Thanks to the listener for spending part of your morning with us, and we look forward to bringing with you some real estate talk next week with our guest Maureen Wood, a certified radon measurement technician and mitigation specialist with Mr. Radon. She's going to talk to us about radon testing as it pertains to the real estate transaction. Once again, thanks to Megan Adams, real estate lawyer from 3rd Street Law. If you have any questions or comments or topic suggestions pertaining to real estate, feel free to contact Dave by emailing dave@realityrealty.ca, or you can contact Dale by emailing dale@dalebryant.ca, or call into the radio station at 905-372-2391.
And don't forget to join me, Dale Bryant, real estate broker with Royal LePage Pro Alliance Realty Brokerage, and Dave Smith, certified home inspector with Pillar to Post Home Inspectors, next Thursday from 11 a.m. until 12 noon for Reality Realty on Northumberland 89.7 FM, truly local radio. Until next week.
I'll light the fire. You place the flowers in the vase that you bought today. Staring at the fire.